Well, if you thought the market was boring when it was seemingly going up a little bit every single day and making new all-time highs, we have a new market now, officially. A lot of chop, another red day yesterday, particularly for big tech with the Qs closing down more than 1%. Your Dow and S&P hung in a little bit better, but that chop is still there. There was still a little bit of that buy in the dip activity. We've got a lot to talk about today as earnings season continues. Jobless claims coming out at 8:30. We'll be bringing on Cow Guy here in about 10 minutes. So should be a great show. Let's go ahead and get it started. Welcome to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, real quick, let's run through those indices real quick. Your Q's getting a bounce today, trading higher this morning. I think we're getting some of those weird prints this morning, but I'm getting 0.5% right now. Going over to the S&P, trading up about 0.3%. Your Dow up about the same as the SPY, 0.3% here. Bitcoin, we will be talking about that today ahead of the upcoming halving. Lots of crypto bulls, you know, say this should be the next big leg that takes us higher on the halving as it has in the past, but is there a potential that it's, you know, too much anticipation? Could be a sell the news type event. We'll talk to Dennis about that as well. Of course, on the earnings front, we've got Netflix this afternoon. That will be your big one. Netflix trading lower this morning, I believe, unless we got a big bounce here. I'll bring out Dennis in a second. We'll see what the real numbers are, because again, I think we're getting some of these weird 8 a.m. FINRA prints here. And then on top of Netflix, you had some other earnings in the space. Of course, Taiwan Semiconductor impacting the chip space. We'll talk that. Comerica, KeyBank reporting some regionals. Blackstone, Alaska Air Group, Ally Financial, all this morning. We can also break down some earnings from yesterday afternoon. Alcoa, Discover Financial, Las Vegas Sands, etc. Got a lot to talk about this morning. As always, if you have any stocks or headlines you want to hit on, drop them in the chat. Dennis, my man, how are you doing this morning?
It's one of those days. Sometimes, you know, you come in and everything's going well and you're like, man, I'm just, you know, doing really good. And then other days you come in, it's like everything is just going against me today. One of those days. I got 42 overnight positions and majority of them are losing me money. So it's one of those days in the overnight portfolio. You know, everybody likes up days. Sometimes I like up days, sometimes I like down days. Depends on how I'm positioned. But the little bit of a rally here this morning is hitting me a little bit in my trading account. But you know what? You're going to have good days and bad days as traders, and you just got a lot, not let it affect you. It's just numbers, meaningless. Just come on in and trade what you got and trade out of your trouble.
Yeah, so if you see Dennis hop off for a second, you know what he's doing. He's
he may hop off at the jobless claims if the numbers move, but otherwise we're pretty stable here. I mean, the S&Ps did rally overnight. We've been holding on to that rally pretty well. I think Taiwan Semiconductor, you know, it's been trading down again. Ignore these FINRA prints because they are so annoying. So again, if you're just tuning in for the first time, we finally figured out what happens at 8 o'clock. Is all the Robin Hoods and the IBKRs and the TD Ameritrades, everybody who does that overnight trading. Those trades, because the actual exchanges are closed at that time, still have to be reported. So what they do is they come in at 8 o'clock, and they dump all those trades onto the tape. So you see your prices moving around right now, like Taiwan Semiconductor trading up 5. No, it's not. It's not trading up 6 right now. That's the FINRA tape dump here. It is actually trading down $2 here at the active market. The offer is 137.38. Hasn't even made really a trade in the last minute, but looks like it's trading like crazy. Looks like it's rallied all the way back, TSM, and that is not the case. So ignore all the FINRA trade dump. That's just your overnight Robinhood trades that were trading ahead of the print. So anyways.
It usually only lasts for a few minutes by like
5 minutes. They take some time.
Yeah, by 8:10, we should be good.
Dump them all on there. Yeah, it's annoying. It's really annoying.
As I mentioned, we got Cow Guy coming on. He will be joining us a little earlier than our normal guests, as he has his own radio show at 8:30. So he should be on in a few minutes before Scott comes on. Dennis, let's talk some Taiwan Semi, of course. This is the company doing the actual manufacturing, putting together the chips for a lot of the major semiconductor companies in the world. EPS came in at $1.38, beat the estimate. Sales beat. 18.87 versus 18.39 estimates. Let's look at upbeat Q2 outlook on AI demand. But this is what I talked about yesterday. I don't think in this market, a double beat and reaffirming guidance is going to be enough. It's going to have to be a double beat significantly and then raising guidance significantly. So I think the market's just saying, hey, look, Taiwan Semi, we knew you guys were doing well. We knew you guys were going to have good numbers because of all this AI demand, but you didn't do good enough. And now it's getting hit a little bit this morning. You mentioned before we started the show, surprisingly, I mean, really not bringing down a lot of other chip names on this news.
No, NXPI is trading down, but you know, you would think that this actually could bring down some of the other chip names as well. It's not the case. NVIDIA is trading up 11 here. AMD trading up here as well. AMD had a horrible day yesterday. You know, I picked that up in my long-term portfolio off that 160 support. Forget about that support. That is long gone. Taiwan Semiconductor, we can break down the technicals here. You know, you've still got a stock in an uptrend, but that trend is starting to look like it might get broken here today. So, you know, then it becomes concerning. Where do you go from 137? If we don't get an earnings reversal, and it's always possible to get an earnings reversal, you know, you're down there looking 130, probably the next support line there. And then, you know, after that, it starts to get a little more interesting too. It's just been the tale of like two markets to a certain extent. You know, there's been rotations when stocks holding up here, but really in the last week or two, it's been the tale of just selling, you know, pretty much, you know, stocks across the board. A little bit of pressure yesterday, especially just in general market talk here. S&Ps, we called this correctly here once again. It was like the day before we rallied and we opened higher, and then they just pulled the rug out from under it. I mean, this is 3 days in a row. Can they do it 4 days in a row where we actually open higher here again? They pull the rug out again? I think so. I'm playing it from the short side here right now, the market. I think that they probably pull the rug again. Maybe jobless claims sets up, you know, a different story here. But, you know, with other things being equal with the information I currently have, 3 days in a row, we've opened higher and then closed lower. I think it can make it four today.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we talk about what the max pain trade would be in the markets. And right now, because buy the dip has worked time and time again over the past 6 months, over the past year, that I still think you have that retail mentality of saying, stocks are down. Oh, the S&P's down 1%. Okay, let me go ahead and buy the dip. Let me go ahead and buy calls right now because it's got to bounce back. That's what I've seen the past year. Yeah. And then it doesn't. And you're starting to see that follow through. And now eventually, I feel like there's going to be a point where people flip and then they start buying puts, and then that's the wrong time to get short because we're not kind of in this parabolic market anymore. But just looking at the chip space, Dennis, what I find interesting right now is even before the market turned over, AMD was showing a lot of weakness here compared to other names. I mean, you look at the top here on the chart. Let me zoom in a little bit because I know
blow off top. Upside capitulation from 180 to 225 in a week. That was the blow-off top. A lot of times when stocks are in an uptrend, they get a blow-off top. We call it upside capitulation, and that's the end. That was the end. That one day where they just couldn't stop buying, and they bought it all the way up to 227, it just went parabolic. And that was your sign to like get the hell out of it all. I held a piece through that whole thing, still have that piece, and then obviously I re-added the piece back here in the 160s, which appears to be a mistake. How do you know it's a mistake? Well, you're losing money. So obviously a mistake. This is just the way stocks move. You know, this AI story just got a little bit overdone. You know, we're not saying the story is over. We're not saying, you know, these stocks aren't going to come back here eventually, but it's a cooling period and we're in a corrective phase in the S&P. We're down, what, 4% from the highs here now. So, you know, we start thinking about the 10% correction level. Like we talked about this yesterday, 470 to 475. It's a logical area for it to go. So there's going to be a little bit more pain ahead if that happens. Now, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know. Maybe the Fed speak hat changes. Maybe an inflation tune changes. But right now, this market is still in profit-taking mode. How do we know that? All rallies seem to be getting sold, except for that UAL rally yesterday.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. But, you know, and I think in the long run, for most investors that are like long investors, you know, people like myself that are buying stocks to hold for a long time, corrections like this aren't a bad thing. Like the opportunity to get AMD, I haven't had an opportunity to get AMD at the 150s since January, since 4 months ago. And I mean, you know, it's clear that AMD is not the leader in this space. You have NVIDIA that, you know, outperforms AMD. But does that mean that AMD still won't have that growth from the AI? And we're talking about, okay, what inning are we in of this AI? At most, the furthest along, probably the second inning, top of the second. You know, so AMD, like, even if it's not the leader, should still benefit from the rise of AI throughout the next couple decades. So, like, I mean, I'm not ready to ring the alarm bells on AMD or some of these other stocks. We talked about it, Dennis. I don't think these corrections are necessarily the worst thing in the world. Jay Rice did make a good point in the chat related to TSM's earnings that the double beat and significant guidance raise may be needed, but the setup also matters going into it, right? If you have too much anticipation and the stock's trading, you know, way higher going into the report, then maybe, you know, it's going to hurt the chances and you're going to have a higher bar there. Let's talk UAL for 1 second, and then we'll bring on a cow guy who's hanging out backstage. I mean, I don't even remember another day, Dennis, I've seen an airline close up, you know, seven. You probably got to go back to like the post-COVID recovery when the market was in just straight V-shaped recovery mode to see an airline close up more than 15%. 17%, I think when we did the show yesterday, after the earnings, it was trading up, what, like 4 or 5%?
Yeah, it might have been up more than that, I think. I think we were trading the 44 area there, but it was up, you know, substantially, 7-8%. But like you said, it kept going. It was the gap and go. And, you know, I didn't think it would have that kind of gas. Like, it was good earnings. We knew they were really good earnings. Listen to Phil LeBeau, you know, on CNBC. He knows what he's talking about. He knows this industry very well. Automotives and airlines, it's a specialty. You know, and he was, like, saying this was unexpected, you know, how good this quarter was. So, big pop. Airlines have been firing. You know, they've been doing really well. They're in a good environment. Unbelievable, though, to get all of its losses back. Like, just like that. It goes from 49 to 40, back to, you know, almost the 50, or back to the 2024 low almost. And then, boom, in one day, gets it all back. So, that's the dream scenario for most investors when their stock goes down. Well, they have a big earnings report to bail me out or something like that. Usually doesn't happen like this, though. But, you know, good for UAL shareholders. And you know what? Delta was looking good. And the airlines do look okay, despite higher oil prices here. But I just tend to think we're still in this market where rallies fizzle out. They don't fizzle out one day. They fizzle out in 2 or 3 days here. So I'm not chasing it here. Obviously, I've missed it.
Yeah, and I mean, with the airlines, I mean, with United Airlines, I mean, you had a company that you have all this, like, bad news heading into the report. So maybe the bar was a little bit lower with all the Boeing stuff. Oh. Sure. And so, you know, that maybe helped lower the bar a little bit. But all right, 8:13 a.m. We see Cow Guy hanging out backstage. Yep. Let's go ahead and bring him in. All right, Scott Shalady, Cow Guy, welcome back to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Well, you know, trying to digest these markets, a lot of activity the past few days, a couple big red days in a row. What do you make of all the action?
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. This whole idea of starting the middle of last December, December the 13th, when Powell had his big pivot and the market took that as 6-7 rate cuts versus what he was talking about, 2 or 3. This rip your face off rally that we saw right after that just confounded me, because I didn't feel as though the economy called for it. And slowly but surely, I've been battered and bruised, but I've been right. But it was not a comfortable ride, and I still think that there's more to the downside here. We're not going to get these cuts, and the market traded higher on them. Now, I'm not saying that the economy is doing poorly, but I will say this: that, you know, 15% of America is enjoying this economy, and 85% of it's not. And I think that Fed now has backed themselves into a corner that they can't raise them, they can't hike them, and they almost can't let them, you know, stay the same. So somebody's going to be a disappointed, you know, party when they do finally do something. And I just can't believe we're still talking about rate cuts. I mean, if you look at what the Fed looks at as far as their data, I mean, what does anybody think is going to happen if we take 50 basis points off the rate now? I mean, house prices are up 6.5% year over year. Look at the cost of everything at the grocery store. Look at the energy costs. I mean, it's hard for me to get my head around these people that still say, I want 2 to 3 more rate cuts, and they're still banging on about it. Now they've moved them back, obviously, but I can't stand this mentality of, well, we need to give ourselves some room to hike them if things do really get hot again. Well, that's like taking the patient off life support, saying, we'll plug it back in if things get bad. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. But you know what? We've had 15 years of 0% interest rates. A lot of guys in their 30s and gals in their 30s are running big desks in New York and on both coasts. and they want rate cuts. And so they haven't seen what I've seen. When I would say 5.25% to 5.5% Fed funds rate is just fine. If you look back at the 50-year average, it's 5.42%. So everybody that says higher for longer is wrong. It's normal for longer. You know, we've had the Fed in our back pocket for so long, and we're trying to normalize and get rid of them because they had their foot on the gas, keeping the interest rates artificially low, that there is going to be some unintended consequences and there's going to be some collateral damage, and we just have to get through it. But every time we see the stocks falter, you have the Fed come to the rescue by, you know, like cutting rates. It's just not a normal world.
Well, that was for 10 years. You know, the Fed was just every time, you know, we pull back 5-10%, the Fed would come to the rescue here. You know, the Fed, you know, just talking about QE, you know, the relentless QE, QE1, QE2, QE3, QE forever. Remember that, cow guy? Like, it was just, you know, nuts. Like, we just think about the stimulus this economy had for so long. And I mean, that's what money managers want back. They want the markets to go higher. People feel better when the markets are at all-time highs, you know. So, and we always say the Fed is, you know, just data dependent, but we know they're market dependent to a certain extent here too. But go back to even, you know, what you started talking about, like housing prices going up. You go to the grocery store. It doesn't feel like me, like I know I see these CPI stats and they say, oh, it's only 3% now or 3.4%. It doesn't feel like that though. Like, I don't know how they calculate this crap, but I mean, it doesn't feel like, I go to the grocery store and it's like the prices go up, it seems like every week. So I just don't see 3% out there. It doesn't feel like it.
No, you're right, because it's not 3%. It's compounding, right? It's if last whatever month we're in now, I'm so busy. April, if last April's CPI was 6%, we're 3.5% higher than last April's 6%, right? So we've got a compounding effect with the CPI. And that's the criminal thing about it. When you listen to these Sunday news programs, or people that don't have any idea about economics talk about, hey, we've brought CPI down 9.1% to 3.5% or whatever it's at. Prices are getting cheaper. No, they're not. They're just going up at a slower pace.
Yeah.
And by the way, since 2020, food is up 34%. That feels more right. Fuel is up 33%. That feels more right. Because we've got this compounding effect that people forget about, that we're up year over year off of last year's up year over year. And that's the problem.
Well, I mean, Scott, or cow guy, I mean, right now, do you have any individual names or trades that you're trying to, capitalize on this market that seems to be turning over?
Yeah, well, I need to get some stuff on board. I was listening to what you guys had to say earlier, and I'm a fan of AMD, right? I know that NVIDIA's got 95% of the market, but I just can't bring myself to buy it when it's done so much. I mean, that's the old trader in me. I mean, when I saw it at 150, it makes it really hard for me to pay 900. But I do like these artificial intelligence names, like you guys said. That play is not over. I still think we're in the first inning, but I want to be picking up some of these things on a big downside, you know, big sell-off. I'll pick up quality because I do think that ultimately, you know, we'll come out of this. I do have technical levels that tell me that the S&P is overvalued and we're going to kind of correct back down to 4,700, maybe 4,800. So I'm going to be looking to feather some of those artificial intelligence names in and get a hold of the big ones that, you know, are always good. I wouldn't mind owning some, you know, Apple. I wouldn't mind owning the Amazon, Walmart. There's a lot of stocks out there, by the way, too, that I'm looking at, like even Wendy's, that will really benefit from more artificial intelligence and, you know, coming into how they interact with their customers. So I think that this is going to be good. This is what I've been looking for, but I've got a few bruises on my body you can't see because I was just flummoxed on the first rally up because I thought, who in the heck thinks we're going to get 6 rate cuts this year? Out of their minds. But like I said, if they graduated in 2008, they've only ever seen 0 for, you know, the first 10, 12 years of their careers. And so 5% feels really expensive. I mean, folks, I remember when I got a mortgage at 7.75% and I was doing cartwheels because it was the lowest in 30 years when it came out.
Yeah, I think you have a really good outlook here because, I mean, we have a lot of when we have guests on that are overall bearish or worried about the economy or interest rates or whatever it is, they don't want to touch anything, but having the mindset of, okay, well, maybe there's still room to fall, but there are names that I do like in the long term, whether that be Apple, AMD, et cetera. I think that's a very healthy outlook. I mean, where do you think that we could legitimately see rate hikes at some point this year?
That's not off the table. I've had some really smart people on my show, the Cow Guy Close, 1 Central, 2 Eastern on RFDTV. I'll get that in there. But I've had some pretty smart people on my show that you've seen on other networks that have quietly whispered to me that they could see another quarter hike. Yeah. I mean, look, if you look at what the Fed's looking at, inflation's on its way back up. Now, we've seen oil back off here because everybody got a little ahead of themselves about any Middle East tensions. But that probably has a bit underneath it that's going to hold. And so if you think that cutting by a quarter to a half isn't going to hurt the economy as far as reignite inflation, I don't know what you're on. But we have an inflation problem, and it's just not going away. And it's not going to go away until the one big thing they get rid of, and that's sticky employment, right? When everybody's making so much more than they were, even though they've seen prices come down in other places, the only way you're really going to break the back of this inflation is by breaking the back of unemployment. And if that means unemployment has to go from wherever it is, 3.7 to 3.8, up to, say, even 5%, you're talking another 4 million people being put out of work. And that's going to be another really uncomfortable thing for the Fed to try to get their head around. So it's going to be a bumpy ride for the next 18 months, if you ask me.
Well, Dennis, Cow Guy's bringing on smart people on his show. That's why we'd never get an invite. right now, I mean, you have Jerome Powell himself. Cow Guy, when we started raising interest rates, and not to where we're at now at 5.25, wherever we're at, but when he started raising interest rates like above 3%, said there was going to be pain in the labor market, and we haven't seen it. So it's kind of hard to interpret the interest rates impact on the labor market when the guy running the show doesn't even know what's going to happen, because he was under the impression we were going to see that unemployment tick higher. We do have initial jobless claims coming out this morning here in about 8 minutes. But again, that's not as big of a deal as the non-farm payrolls that come out on Fridays. I mean, what level of unemployment do you think we would need to get to before then you see inflation start to come down and then maybe the Fed's in a more comfortable position?
Everything's been, you know, since the pandemic, a lot of these data, the economic data indicators that we all look at, they've been skewed. They've been polluted. It's going to take 5 to 10 years, I think, I just hope I live another 25 years so I can figure out what's been really going on behind these numbers. Now, I've delved into the unemployment one, and, you know, you got to sell it like it is. And there are statistics out there saying that, you know, regular U.S. citizens, the employment rate has people being put into the workforce has gone down, and immigrant, whether they be legal or illegal, has skyrocketed. And we're talking 3.5 million versus 78,000. Okay. So something of that magnitude. There's a lot of folks being put into work that aren't really hitting the rolls. And I just don't know how the BLS gets their head around it. And they're having a difficult time. But there's a lot of that going on in those numbers. And it's going to take 5 years for that to flush out. And like I said, I've had people on my show that say they hope they're alive in 25 years because it's really just not making any sense, because you all have anecdotal evidence. I do in my family, of smart kids in my family in the, you know, the ages of 35 to 40 years old that don't want to lose the job they've got now because there's just not another one to replace it. In this market where everybody says there's so many easy jobs out there, that's just not the case. But with the numbers that we get as far as JOLTS, unemployment, and the number we're going to get today, it looks like it's really easy to get a job, but I'm just telling you, it's not.
Yeah, I think it's particularly, like, you know, if you look at like white collar jobs versus blue collar, like if you want to go get a job as an electrician or you know, carpenter, like there might be some more of those available, maybe less so than there were a couple of years ago, but I think it's particularly in the white collar. There's so many companies now are implementing AI solutions and stuff and figuring out, oh, hey, if we use this AI service, we don't need, you know, 15 guys on our marketing team anymore. We only need 10. And so do you think that's a legitimate concern in the next 5 to 10 years that you could see?
Wait till that hit. I lived in London for 16 years and I saw that blow up. A lot of places in London went real high tech early when it comes to fast food restaurants, right? And what happened was this. Yeah, like in California, the $20 minimum wage thing, they got rid of a lot of regular folks that were working there, because once again, they're taking, you know, when we have a great economy, nobody talks about this stuff because this is a symptom, right? And everybody tries to treat the symptom and not the problem. But they replaced a lot of folks with not artificial intelligence, but, you know, touch screens and those things. And that really caused a problem for the local municipalities because they were so used to taxing the worker. But when the worker got canned and they were replaced by a machine, boy, oh boy, it was really hard to come in and tax a machine. And they went through some big learning curves over there. And I think that's going to happen here when you figure out that these local municipalities are really counting on all the income that comes in from taxing those workers in a lot of those fast food restaurants when they're no longer workers and they're robots. How do you tax a robot?
I don't know, but that's a good point. I haven't heard anyone really brought that up before. Well, Cow Guy, I know you got a hop. You got a thing at 8:30. We'll let you go, but thanks for joining Benzinga's pre-market prep. We'll chat soon.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, Dennis, about 4 minutes till this jobless claims comes in. How are we?
Do we think it's going to be a mover or it's going to be a like, you know, we're not going to move? I mean, we're choppy ahead of it. We are leaking here a little bit on the S&P, obviously. You know, we just leaked down there about 10 handles from where we were just an hour ago. So we are leaking. You think this is a market mover, chat? You think this can be a market mover? Do we got to go wide or do you just sit back and, you know, let everything happen?
I think the only way it's going to be a market mover, and this isn't like anything groundbreaking analysis or anything, but I think only if it's very significant to either side. I don't think if it's slightly hot or slightly cool, you're going to see much market action. But if it's, oh my God, all of a sudden it was, you know, double the amount of jobless claims they were expecting, then the question is, what does the market do? Does it rip on that news because, okay, the labor market's finally weakening? Does it drop because the economy looks like it's cooling down? I mean, you tell me what you think, Dennis.
This is not a big tick. Jobless claims typically doesn't move the market at all, but we're in this, you know, market right now where every single piece of economic data is like, will the Fed cut this year or not? So, you know, like obviously jobs is something they look at. So, you know, we want numbers that are not hot. The market wants not, because the market is only concerned about the Fed's projected trajectory here for interest rate cuts. And, you know, we've got some people saying no cuts this year. I'm leaning towards that way, too. You know, Scott was saying, why? Why do we need to cut? You know, why? You know, we've still got an inflation problem here. It's better than it was, but it's still not gone. Why cut this year? So as we get more data, you know, that looks like the economy is doing just fine. Jobs seem to be fine. There's less reason to cut interest rates. So 2 minutes, we're going to find out. I think this is still going to matter. I think you will see some movement off of this.
Yeah. All right. Going back before we have a couple more minutes.
We're going to talk the EV trade afterwards. You know, that's the revolution that seems to have never come that we teased in the headline.
The title.
I did buy the Globe Life. So just quickly here, I did buy the Globe Life. Couldn't help myself yesterday. I said it on the show. I'm like, I had bought a little piece. And I'm like, you know what? When they tweeted out, and we talked about this too, when they tweeted out, you know, the fuzzy panda that, you know, about the executive looking at pornography, I'm like, is this really what their case is built on? I mean, it's such a stretch for a stock to fall 50% because of an exec. And obviously there were extra allegations, but they're adding to the case with, oh, here's an exec that was looking at pornography. I mean, seems like such a stretch. And that's why I'm like, you know what? What if their whole case is just a stretch? You know, in this stock that's been around here, just lost 10 years of gains in a day. You know, I just feel like the whole case could be a stretch. I don't know. Maybe they were spot on. Maybe the whole thing's fraud. Maybe I'm going to lose all my money. But I came in yesterday at the open. I think I paid $60.29 or something and bought a full-size position. So I'm a full-size position in GL. And it's doing pretty well. It's up another buck here. I feel like as time goes on here too, it's on the company's side. Now, again, there's another investigation by real regulators out there. So that could, you know, make things a little bit different. You know, maybe there is, you know, a lot of fraud and maybe this is just, you know, a big Ponzi scheme or something like that. But okay, the company's been around for 40 years. I mean, I think there's more of a chance that there's just some exaggeration in the Fuzzy Panda case and maybe the stock shouldn't have fallen 50%. That's what I'm betting on. Here we go.
Yeah, I think it's one thing if you're if you do a short report and it's like the pornography thing is like the 100th thing on the list and it's like down there. But if you're like putting that out there as one of like your
the main it wasn't one of the main reasons. They're adding it on to their case. Okay, so their case is built on fraud.
Slightly cool. 212 versus 215 estimate. Philadelphia Manufacturing Index came in at 15.5 versus 1.5 estimate. I wonder if that's like a misprint or if it's really that hot. U.S. continuing jobless claims came in at 1.812 million versus 1.818 million.
TLT leaking a bit.
Yeah.
TLT, it's your lie detector test, remember. We look at TLT. I didn't see where it was. Who was looking at the TLT? Where was it before? Bring up the chart. Before the number, I feel like it was up just slightly before the number. We're really chopping around. We chopped down a little bit. Now we're chopping back up. Where was it before the number?
Looking at a 2-minute chart here on the TLT. Yeah, it looks like it got up to...
We took down a bet.
It was a high on this 2-minute candle of 89.28, dropped down to 89.10 or 89 flat now. So dropping a little bit here on the TLT, you can see that's just been kind of, selling off from this point right here at...
Yeah.
It got up to right at $90, actually 89.60, and has been kind of dropping since then. Still dropping now 89 flat here, down 0.3%. Let's go back to the S&P SPY, up 0.2%. So I don't know. I think today, we'll see what we've continued to see. And that's some chop.
I think we're going to continue to see chop. I don't see any reason why, the story is going to change and we're just going to go right back into a bull market. We're just going to start buying all stocks and go right back. This market's spooked. There are people losing some money here right now. Market is spooked. The rallies are getting sold here. It sets up. Ryan Dietrich, was putting out some stats, and this has only happened 20 times or something in the last 40 years where you've actually seen, and I'm probably butchering the stat, Ryan, sorry, I know you listen to the show, where we've seen the market open higher and close lower 3 days in a row, only 20 times. And in all those cases, or in the majority of those cases, the market has continued to be somewhat weak afterwards. So I think we're setting up for that again. I'm playing that. I'm shorting stocks and been shorting stocks into the rally here to a certain extent. And, hoping that we're going to come back down here again. Now, long-term portfolio stays long. Didn't do anything with the long-term portfolio except buy the Globe Life. Oh, also, I did sell my Alcoa. So I traded Alcoa basically for Globe Life. I sold something else too. I don't remember what else I sold. I sold another stock too. Oh, I sold some American Airlines into the pop. I sold a little bit more AAL because it's been a dog. It was an F-15. Popped up on the UAL news, and then they're going to report here. Actually, did AAL report already? I thought they were due to report. They're not on my sheet though.
No, we had Alaska this morning.
I don't know why I don't have AAL. I feel like they're coming up. But anyways, besides the point. So I didn't want to take the Alcoa through the print. I'm just hearing this in this market where it seems prudent just to take some gains when you got them. It was a nice 32 to 37 move. So I did sell my Alcoa and I bought the GL. So just jockeying. Still quite a bit of cash in my long-term portfolio. I've had quite a bit of cash the whole way up, so I've missed, some of this rally with some of that cash. But again, it was the cash component was more that I not owning preferred stocks, I'm owning cash because I own preferred stocks at 5%, when you get cash at 5%. So just that alternative, sold my utility stocks, moved it to cash. My core like growth holdings, have still been there, NVIDIA, I'm still in the AMDs and stuff. So we're leaking a little bit here, AB. We'll see if it can be 4 days in a row where we open higher and close lower. I think it can.
Wow, I had no clue that Baba was trading below $70.
Oh, they've been killed. Talk China trade for a bit. There's the revolution that hasn't come too. You want to talk about another one is, we get this rally in China over the course of the last couple months, EEM coming up, FXI coming up, Baba showing a little bit of like stability, a little bit of life, and nope, they pulled the rug out from all of these things now. I have a half-size position in Baidu, which is quickly becoming a quarter-size position because the stock continues to make new lows here. It's the only one I own. I guess I shouldn't own any. It's just a mess. China just cannot get, the valuations have been cheap for a very long time, but they just can't figure it out. And it's just an absolute disaster, really.
Yeah, and maybe the situation in China right now, I've been following it, but maybe not as closely as I should be, but maybe it'll give us some insights into maybe what we could see in the U.S. because from the economic standpoint, China's inflation has fallen a lot in the last year. I mean, this is all obviously just according to their numbers, which who knows how accurate or real they are.
Yeah.
But on the back half of that inflation falling has been slower economic growth. So it becomes like, okay, that's good news that inflation is falling. But then when the economy is, stuttering out and that's the reason that inflation is falling because you don't have the economic growth, is that really a great thing for stocks? Well, here in the U.S., it might be because we know, okay, then we can just cut interest rates and that should respond well. But it'll only respond well, I think, in the U.S. markets if as soon as we cut rates, okay, the economy picks back up, which I don't think necessarily that's going to happen. I think you'll see this lagging effect where it'll take time then for the money to start pumping back into the markets, et cetera. So I don't think people should think like, oh, as soon as we get rate cuts, markets are going to rally. If that if the back end of that is that our economy is slowing down. If we get rate cuts and the economy is doing as well as it is right now, okay, then it's off to the races. But I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think we're going to get those rate cuts until our economy is slowing down, which again, then the market may not like as much. So you know, I mean, definitely something to watch here with these Chinese names. I mean, the Baba now is basically at, I mean, it got down to, did it hit the 50s at one? No, it got down to about $60 here in October 2022.
It's not even far from all-time lows, which is insane to think about here. Like, I think the all-time low, if you go all the way back, and obviously we're going to have to ballpark it on this chart because I only have 7 years on
around
this
$55.
Roughly $55. You're talking about all-time lows on something, which in, if you looked at their earnings, it's just grown.
I'm going to buy some of that long term.
Completely disconnected from fundamentals. But you know what? That's the concern, that eventually we're going to get some type of invasion, or China's going to be on the out, and all these stocks are going to become like Russian stocks. Like, that's the overall, that's the big concern. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that's why the market is so scared. We saw what happened with all the Russian stocks. They never even reopened. I mean, all these Russia stocks, you know, like it was like YNDX was one. Yeah, Yandex. You know, it's still closed. It's 2 years later here, AB, you know, on YNDX. And I believe the stock is still actually closed. Like, they closed and they never reopened them.
Look at these numbers. Look at these numbers here on Baba. Forward PE of 7.9.
No, it's a joke.
Price to sales of 1.3. I mean, this is ridiculously cheap. And if you continue to, if you have a really cheap stock that continues to have growth, that's usually a pretty good recipe, but obviously there are some other things involved in this recipe. You throw it in the pot. You've also got geopolitical tensions. You have some other risks. You have maybe a weak overall economy in China. I mean, there's not, I'm not saying like, oh my God, it's a no-brainer, because clearly it's not, but I do think there's opportunity there for the brave, and we'll see. I'm going to add some of my long-term. But all right, let's move over to
EVs. But you can say it's not even just Baba. I mean, Baidu, and you can go through them all. Pinduoduo has come down here now too on JD.com. I mean, $100, $25. They've crashed. All these China stocks have just been in what it feels like an eternal bear market, but it's only been for the last 3 or 4 years. But they have just been not the place to be. Market is rallying back. We're bouncing back here once again. Choppy markets in store for us here today, folks. Expect more chop. It's not going to be smooth sailing in either direction.
All right, Dennis, let's get to some the EV trade, because I saw some people in the chat talking about Tesla. So, you know, I mean, going back to the COVID trade, you had your obvious COVID plays that got way overdone, whether you're talking Moderna, your Zooms. I mean, like, talk about, you know, divorce from fundamentals. You look at Moderna getting up above 500. You look at Zoom. What'd that get above? Oh, no, that's not right. Hold on. Did Zoom got above, like, I want to say 250 was its highs or somewhere around there? Check. Wait.
500. Over,
oh, my
500.
God. 600.
Over 500.
600. Okay, yeah. So Zoom's back down to $60. So all these names. For whatever reason, the EV stocks, which those were got also swept up, and definitely, you know, not just during the COVID times in 2020, but during 2021 when we were making new all-time highs, that was one of the hottest markets to be in. It's taken a while, I think, for these stocks to kind of come back to earth. And now you're seeing kind of maybe a point where they're settling down. I mean, you look at the lithium ETF, actually from Global X, which is where yesterday's guest was from. The lit ETF got to $100. Here, double topped at the end of 2021. And the end of 2021 was really when, like, the growth, just buy growth at all costs trade.
Yeah.
That's when that trade ended. You look at when ARKK peaked, it was at the same time. You looked at when Bitcoin initially peaked, it was at the same time. Well, actually, ARKK topped before that, excuse me. But still, I mean, ARKK was trading at 125 at this point and then just absolutely tumbled. The EV trade now feels dead, at least until further notice.
It's been dead. I mean, if you're in any of these stocks, you've been absolutely killed. I had two lithium stocks in my long-term portfolio. I took the ALB loser last year. I kept a little small quarter-size position in the ALTM, which has quickly become like an eighth-size normal position because it just goes down every day. And then you get like stuff like this happening, like LAC. So LAC has just been absolutely killed, $40 to $6. Well, last night, they come out with a 55 million share secondary offering. You can say, oh, it's just a secondary offering. But I tweeted out at the time, I'm like, oh my gosh, 55 million shares is only 160 million shares outstanding. You're talking about like over 30% dilution. And that's why they've knocked 30% off the market cap. This market is very efficient in that way. And they were talking about the price last night being $5 to $5.50. And I'm like, I tweeted out, I don't think anybody's paying $5.50. It's 467 right now. They're going to have a hard time even getting this offering to go. Like, I don't know if the official pricing came out here, but, you know, who's paying 550 when the stock's going 467 here? So maybe it already came out. Maybe they had to lower the price. I'm trying to see if it did come out, if they actually came out with a price. It looks like $5. So it came out at the low end of that at $5. They had to get it off the board. But now you're 467. But now everybody who buys at five is losing money too, because you think, oh, I'm going to buy at a five, flip it out of 550, make a quick 50 cents on this offering. Now, 466, have fun with that, folks. So it's just this type of market where it's vicious to a certain extent on certain stocks. So lithium, they hate everything EV. The EV revolution that was supposed to happen, it's been delayed, or maybe it's not coming now that they're going to hybrid. I don't know. Obviously, we've seen the disaster, you know, Tesla's been for the last little bit, but it's not even close to the disaster of the other ones. Fisker's off the board. Rivian seems like it just goes down every single day. It's $8 here now. Lucid is just a mess. We've got the Saudis having to put more money into it. It's $2 and looks like it's going to go off the board. All those other little ones, like there was a half dozen little ones, those are all basically worthless or off the board or penny stocks here now. It's just an epic
Lordstown,
epic disaster.
Fisker, yeah. The one that, I mean, it seems out of Buffett's realm, but Buffett is invested in this BYD Chinese EV, or I think he might have sold some shares. I think he's still in it. Chat, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know if you saw the headlines a couple weeks ago, Dennis, but BYD in China is putting out an EV that is like $10,000. I mean, how does anyone compete with that? If those start coming over here and they start selling $10,000 electric vehicles, like who's going to be able to compete with that?
Well, tariffs will come in here and stop it probably. You know, that's where we're at here. And if we do bring up, you know, the tariffs thing, remember the Alcoa pop we had yesterday.
But even a 50% tariff on that puts it at $15,000.
Yeah, people still buy it. Right. I don't know if that's, like, again, there's competition coming from everywhere here. So it's a good point that you're making, you know, like the Tesla stock goes down seemingly every day here now to making new 52-week lows. I have that small quarter size position. And, you know, I should have just sold it all. I bought something like 185, averaging on 185, sold a bunch of it 175 because, you know, I thought the bots thing was going to, the story's going to get hot. It's not. The cars are just too, the lots are full. You know, as soon as I came back from that trip from Florida, we looked at that car lot just north of Toronto, and it was full of Teslas. My brother-in-law pointing it out, that was a solid stock because the cars aren't selling right now. They're not selling well at all. And you know what? It's got a 50 P or 48 P on it now. It looks like it's on its way to $100. Talking against the little small quarter piece I have in the long-term portfolio, but it does look like this stock is on its road to $100.
Yeah, and let's face it. I mean, Tesla has is one of those stocks, probably the stock that has the most, like, just, you know, retail investors that are like all in on Tesla, love Elon Musk. And I think a lot of these bulls, maybe they aren't realistic about the competition, because no matter how you want to spin it, whether you're talking about the self-driving, other companies are doing that. Whether you're talking about energy storage, other companies are doing that. Do I think Tesla will still be a major player and make money in those industries? Yes, I do. But a lot of people act like they're the only ones that are going to have a self-driving car, the only ones that are going to be able to make money off of energy storage, or the only ones to have humanoid robots, which we know is not the case. So
yeah,
I think
the market,
like,
is not believing it anymore, AB. The market's just not believing it.
Right. And I mean, how many like promises or things can you say as Elon Musk before people start to just be like, okay, you know, I'm from Missouri. We're the show me state. I'm like, all right, just show me, man. Don't say you're going to put out a $20,000, $25,000 Model Y. You've been saying that since 2012. Just do it. Just put it out.
Yeah.
You know, and so
here isn't the issue, though, with just flat out shorting the stock, is he doesn't like when his stock price is going down.
No.
They are sitting on a pile of cash, you know, and I'd imagine if it starts going lower, to say like a buyback or do something, you know, some type of financial engineering to try to pop the stock price back up, because it royally pisses him off when the stock is going down. We know he actively, you know, would talk on Twitter against the short sellers. You know, he does not. He sees the stock performance going down as, you know, a failure of himself. Like, he does see that. You can tell just how much it affects him. So, you know, all CEOs say, stock price move up now, it doesn't affect me. I just run the business. But he is affected by it. And I would not be surprised if it continues to go lower, if he does do some type of buyback or something just to try to turn the narrative here around. But right now, this Tesla story is very ice cold, not broken. And again, if I'm going to buy an EV company, it would be Tesla. Definitely not broken, but definitely 100%. Cooled off substantially.
Yeah, I mean, Elon is, seems like the type of guy that probably doesn't like seeing, you know, his name move down the list of the richest people in the world. See Zuckerberg, passing him up. Which, by the way, I mean, bringing up Zuckerberg, I did want to talk about, I mean, we've been talking about all the different market drivers, what's going to move the markets. But at the end of the day, at least when you're talking to S&P 500 and the Qs, it's still so weighted toward the Magnificent Seven. I don't think we've talked about really a lot of these stocks the past couple of shows. I mean, right now in this choppy market, what do you think? I mean, do you think there's like risk that we have a Meta retreat 10% or a...
Oh, yeah. 10% is like, I feel like 10% on a lot of these stocks, it's already happened, you know. But again, you can see best of breed, though. So like, look at Meta, and it's just been holding up. This is a tale, like... Bringing up what Derek was saying on Tuesday from T3, I mean, there's a lot of stocks that are down 30, 40% here in the last, you know, month. So, you know, it's not just a 10% story for a lot of stocks here. Like, we keep talking about 10% correction. There is a lot of stocks, like the Sentinel One, you know, down from 30 to 20. I mean, even Palo Alto Networks, it's down from 370 to 270. We're talking 30% corrections on some stocks. So at a certain point in time, some stocks may be, you know, just start to look at, get your shopping list ready. I mean, there are some stocks that have really, really, really been beat up here. It's not just a story of like, oh, we're going to get this S&P correction of 10%. A lot of stocks have already had significantly higher corrections than 10%. And some of them are kicking 20 or 30%. I mean, look at Kathy, ARKK breaking down every single day. I mean, we just had a 10% correction on Kathy in 10 days. It's down 15% in the last 10 days. Again, Tesla. All the crap that she buys. But I mean, there's a lot of stocks, you know, and she's got a portfolio of stocks there. So there's a lot of stocks that have really taken some heat.
By the way, Kathy did, not that this is that shocking, but Kathy did start buying the dip again on Tesla yesterday.
Well, why not? Yeah,
she's basically saying if Tesla's going down, I'm going down with the ship. No,
well, she's at a point where she's made so much money from her absurd original. What she did originally, she made an absurd call on a stock. It was $200. It's going to go
$4,000.
And then it happened. And then everybody's like, this person is the genius of all geniuses. She called this. It was absurd. And she called it. And really, she never called anything else. She was the one-hit wonder. You know, you think about the 80s. Everybody had the bands. You know, when, you know, that's a great song. What else do they have? They didn't have another song. You know, so many one-hit wonders. Kathy is the one-hit wonder. It was
like a Michael Burry kind of.
Yeah, well, that's Michael Burry, different story too. But, you know, like obviously he called it the housing, and we know the Big Short and the whole story from that.
But he's been wrong a lot since then.
I've been wrong a lot lately, a real lot lately. But I mean, you know, you look at her overall performance and it is so epically disappointing here. You know, ARKK massively underperforming the Qs. I mean, you just look at it even over the course of the last 6 months. I mean, you know, we've had this rip your face off rally in the Qs to the tune of 30%, and her fund is almost back to where it was, like almost flat. It takes a very special talent to be long only tech stocks and not make money in the last, you know, 3-4 months.
Oh, she had like no AI exposure, and then she started buying Nvidia when it was at
so
like,
bad
when it was above $900. Like, I really don't understand. But if you guys ever want, like, just for fun, go through some of the reports that ARK puts out, and some of the numbers they like print in the reports are just absolutely ridiculous and insane.
It's all absurd, absurdity. And you know what? You know, people get mad when I pick on her. The reason that we've picked on her for so long is that we're trying to protect other people from losing money. So when in this show, we, you know, try to, like, you know, steer people in the right direction. You know, when I feel like you're just going and you're just blindly buying ARKK and saying it's going back to $150, it's not. You know, it's poor money management is what it is. You know, her performance is all because her stock picking skills were just very, very poor. And, you know, and that's where we're at. I mean, when you've got, you know, a bear market, everybody's getting hit in their long-term portfolio. But when you're ripping on the S&Ps, you know, to the tune of 30% in the course of 4 or 5 months, and you're not making anything, like, what do you think? You know, when the bear markets come, you're going to start making money. You can't make money in the bull markets. You're going to be really trouble in the bear markets.
Yeah, and just to your point, Dennis, I mean, I'm looking at the five-year charts right now. If you bought the S&P 500, basically the easiest thing you can go out and do 5 years ago, you're up 70.6%. If you bought ARKK 5 years ago, and that's not even like at its peak, that was at $47 in 2019 before it ran up, you're down 10%. So to your point, she is like destroying retail investors' capital, people that believe in her, hardworking money going into it, and just not, you know, basically like, you know, got all this hype because of one big run-up and one big call on Tesla. And
since it was all because of Tesla.
Yeah.
And everybody thought of these other calls, she's got 35 other stocks and they're all going to do the same thing. And you know what? To her point, 2021, it looked like she was going to be right. ARKK and everything. But that was the bubble. That was the big bubble burst and none of these stocks are coming back.
And she had
She went all in on EV too. And I mean,
Influence at that point. Like she would buy a stock and it would go up 10%.
20%.
Yeah, people thought like, oh, this is the stamp of approval now. This thing's going to go up. And now she, you know, over time, it's like, it's a show me market. You start to lose that influence. But this is a good transition to our next topic, because one of Kathy's other calls is for Bitcoin to hit $1 million a coin. And you do have at least 500,000. But I think she also said 1 million before, too. We're coming up on this halving event, which I believe is supposed to happen tomorrow and Saturday, April 19th and 20th. So the halving basically is supposed to limit the supply of Bitcoin. So it makes so when the computers do the code to mine a Bitcoin, you only get half of what it would have been before the halving. In the past, this has resulted in rallies in Bitcoin. So a lot of people think we're going to see another rally again. It's kind of like an earnings setup, though, because we've already ran up now into this halving, and a lot of it is
Factors. We're selling off into the halving this time.
Well, this time, well, in the past week, but I'm talking about over the past like 6 months, you've ran up from, you know, 50,000 in January up to seven new all-time highs. You obviously do have other things at play here between the Bitcoin ETFs and the approvals and more adoption. So it's not the same story going into the halving as we've seen in the past. But I do still worry that this could be a sell the news event.
That's a significant worry here that could happen here again. I mean, I just look at the Bitcoin performance, it's pretty crappy. I still believe, and I don't believe $1 million and all these absurd price targets, you know, I take. But I've said before, I think it'd go to 100,000. So I did sell some of my Bitcoin. I sold the extra stuff that I had bought, and I sold it like dang near the top. You know, that was actually a pretty good sale. And I'm looking to reload that. I don't know if it's going to be on this halving. Maybe we get a pop up into the halving. It's Friday. Is it half? Chad, help me out. I don't follow closely enough. Is it Friday? Is Friday the official day of the halving?
It says like 19th and 20th or 19th or 20th. So I don't, that's tomorrow.
I don't really know.
It's whenever the computers and the robots say it's going to happen.
Decide.
I don't know. But I mean, you know, all right, Dennis, well, I didn't know you sold some of your Bitcoin. You can't say you're a hodler anymore.
I didn't hodl at all, but I have the core position still. I still held the core position there. So I'm hodling the core position.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's hard. Like, I don't know the reaction. If it was running straight up into the event, I'd say it's probably a sell the event thing, but we've come off, you know, 10% here in the last week. So now that changes the narrative to a certain extent here, but you know, all Bitcoin is a NASDAQ stock. It's trading with tech stocks. So as tech starts to roll over and tech starts to look weak, Bitcoin does too. Throw those charts on top of each other. They look kind of identical. Bitcoin's a leverage play on tech. So, and you know, the people who are buying Bitcoin are the same people who are buying tech stocks. So it's why it's all kind of related to a certain extent. We're in a cooling period. We're still in a cooling period here. But, you know, there's going to be a buying opportunity. I'm not predicting the end of the world. I'm not here saying, you know, Peter Schiff style, this is it. You got to put everything in gold because the end of the world is coming here. No, we're not saying that. We're just saying cooling period, but we've cooled off, you know, on some stocks maybe a little bit too far. So maybe chat, get a shopping list together. You know, I've got some cash. Let's, you know, look at some stuff that maybe has come down too far here and maybe start initiating some stuff. I did the Globe Life that came down suddenly, and you know, I like that one. But you know, give me some other ideas here, chat, because you know, I look through the charts here too. I think there's going to be a good buying opportunity coming here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, and I mean, when you have these retracements, or you have these, you know, pullbacks in the market, you start to see valuations of companies that have maybe ran too much start to come in a little bit and become more attractive. And I don't know. I mean, like, I've been looking at some of the Mag 7 stocks just because I think at the end of the day, those are going to end up driving the market either higher or lower. So understanding kind of like, okay, well, what would be the bottom on Apple here if we drop another 10% in the overall market? Is it 10% for Apple or is it more because it was already out of favor before the market started downturning?
Apple's concerning. So let's bring up the Apple chart here. We're doing a little bit of a technical show here, I guess, now. Apple's somewhat concerning because you had the big pop on the AI chips and the Mac. You suckered in more people here now, though. You never want to see these pops give it all back because what that creates is another whole group of bag holders. And you obviously, you've got a lot of bag holders in the last 3-4 months. It's been going down, 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 down. And then two-day pop goes from 168 to 178. Everybody's like, Apple's back. I'm getting in here. It's going. What you created now is another group of bag holders, that these people who just bought it on for those AI chips going into the Mac are like, oh, you know, I'm down money. Please give me money back. Come on, just bounce a buck. Just give me a buck. Give me $2 here. I'll get my money back. I'll never buy stocks again. Those people are caught now too. It typically, those people don't get bailed out. So I do think Apple's going to break down and make new lows here now. So if you want to buy a breakout, you want a 50% retracement on the move. Once it cuts over the 50, and then it's like, oh, this isn't working, you know, and that's your tune to bail out. So, you know, when you see a stock, it's been going down, pops, 50% retracement move. Never want to see it give it all back because now you're back to full bag holder central here. And when stocks are in full bag holder central, they typically go lower.
This is my time horizon stock because I have a completely different outlook on Apple depending on your time horizon. Like, I think if you plan on buying Apple and holding it for 10 years, I think you'll be okay. You know, I do think a lot of the, at what Apple's
maybe,
doing.
Maybe. But again, you've got to buy good companies at reasonable valuations here. And the one issue that Apple has is it is just a cell phone company here right now. iPhones basically are half of the revenue. So we've talked about this for a while. When I was long Apple and I made a lot of money in Apple, I made over 400% my long-term portfolio in Apple being long from like 2012 to like 2022. I had it for like 8 or 10 years. It was growing and growing and growing those earnings so fast that the stock price couldn't keep it up. It's not growing earnings anymore. There's almost no growth here. And now you're still paying 26 times earnings for a no growth company. You don't want to see it start getting valued like a real traditional, like cell phone company or something like that. They need to come out with something new. And I believe you're going to be right. I believe Apple's going to be innovative and they're going to be, you know, coming out with new stuff. But I've also argued on this show that they have not had that huge innovative product since Steve Jobs has passed away. So my question is, are they as innovative as they were when Steve Jobs was running the company? I don't think so. And that's concerning as well. So the valuation here, trading significantly higher than a market multiple for, you know, no growth is a concern. So, you know, if you get a retracement and say this thing starts to trade like just like a cash flow company, an iPhone company, it starts trading 18, 19 times earnings, you know, then that's a significant fall off here too. So they need to come up with a new product. They need to come out with something. We thought, you know, the goggles, the whatever the hell it's called, I even forget, the Apple Vision Pro was maybe going to be it. I got on board for that. Well, it wasn't working. You know, as soon as I heard the headache thing, I'm like, I'm out. Because, you know, people aren't going to buy something that's giving them a headache. So now all of a sudden that's cooled off. They scrapped the car. Now they're scrambling. It feels like they're scrambling. Like, well, I need AI chips. Let's do the AI thing. Let's go, scrap the car, start focusing on AI. You can see like Tim Cook or whatever behind the scenes, you know, scrap the car. Let's go. Okay, we're going to go here now, you know, go full AI. Get it full AI.
Yeah.
It's like they're behind the ball. There's, I think, better companies to buy than Apple out there. And I think that's what the market is saying.
I know, but I mean, like, so I think the flip side is, you know, okay, so say it's just a cell phone company right now. The iPhones, you haven't had that much innovation there. I mean, there's not that much different. You know, they improve the camera every year, and that's about it. But what happens when they do implement some, like, really good, useful AI technology in the next iPhone? All of a sudden, everyone's going to go out, and I don't think we've seen a cycle like that where everyone wants to upgrade to the new iPhone. So if they do that, then I think you will see earnings growth at least that year. And then the same thing with their computers, right? You know, the MacBooks that are supposed to be coming out with the AI at the end of this year, maybe everyone does want to go out and buy those at a faster pace than they were. So I'm not saying that's like the long-term growth you're looking for, but I could foresee some, you know, some earnings growth there that we haven't seen in Apple over the past 4 years based on this AI stuff. And I do think them moving toward like in-house chips and stuff will end up in the long run helping them compared to other companies that are forced to basically pay whatever Nvidia or so-and-so is setting the price at. Real quick, because I saw some good stuff.
Before you end this, I just want to finish with one more thing here. Why I would ask you, AB, why not wait until we see that product? Because that's what people have been saying for the last few years here on Apple. They're coming with this, they're coming with this, they're coming with this. I bought on the Vision Pro. You know, I went long on the Vision Pro because, like, maybe this is the product. And then you knew after a week or two, you're like, nope, this isn't. Get out. And so I would say you have time. I would say I don't think the stock rallies until we actually see that innovative product. You know, when the stock started rallying back in like 2007, 2008, my buddy Chris Banney, sitting behind, beside me in the Bray Trading office, comes in with the, you know, the iPod, and he's scrolling through and all these covers are on his thing. And then I'm like, that is just cool. I'm like, that is a cool product. Everybody is going to want it. You know what? Apple hadn't even started rallying at that point in time. You'll usually actually see the product before you have the huge move. You'll get a taste of the product before you have the huge move. So what I would argue on the Apple is, why not wait? And it's a prove me story. Show me that new product. I'll buy the stock. You're going to show me that new product that everybody in the whole world has to buy? I'll buy it then. Until you show me that product, I'm out on Apple. I'll trade it. Trade it. Don't own it.
That's a good point. And maybe it's just because I've throughout my whole entire life, it's just been like the same story with Apple, that they continue to like outperform expectations. So that's my view of the company. Maybe I'm just too trusting. Times have changed. You're right. So maybe we wait and see that product.
I think you're going to end up being right. I think they're going to come out with something. I like to believe in Apple here, but I also think I don't need to be long it and just have a guess, you know, just like, oh, I'm going to gamble that they're going to come out with a new product.
I hear you. I don't disagree with you at all. I was just, from my point of view, is I'm trying to, I guess, to help explain why I am so ambitious on their endeavors. I did see some people dropping some good stocks in the chat. Snowflake, that we could look at for a shopping list. Maybe we'll pull those up tomorrow, but it is 9:02 a.m. Dennis, any final thoughts for the day? Are you repositioning? Are you going to go long if we're rallying?
Chop. I think it's going to be a very choppy day. I don't envision this market just, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we just sold off significantly. Now we just rallied significantly. We kind of feel like we're all over the place to a certain extent here today. I don't think it's going to be, you know, a change of, you know, once we start the regular session, then we're just buying stocks all day. We're just selling stocks all day. I think the fade trade's still working. I'm fading moves. You know, if you're fading this morning, then you're just buying into the dip here. It's already been working here to a certain extent. IWM was up 67, you know, up over a buck, then just gave it all back. Now just rallied a buck here again while we were on the show. So, I mean, the fading is happening in the pre-market. I think that continues into the regular session. The pre-market trading is often indicative of how the regular session is going to go. This pre-market trade has been just a chop fest. So I think it continues on into the regular session.
Yeah, and everyone asking about Joel. Joel is just on a little trip. He will be back on Monday. I'm sure we'll hear some more details about that. But thank you to everyone who was concerned about his whereabouts. But all right, 9:03.
He's alive and well.
Alive and well. I got a picture from him yesterday. It was a funny picture. Maybe we'll show it on the show next week when he comes back. But all right, guys, live trading starting up right now. Please smash the like if you haven't already. And we will be back tomorrow.